This is Entrepreneurs the Playbook, where each week I bring you some of the greatest athletes, celebrities, and entrepreneurs to talk about their personal and professional playbook to success.
Welcome to Office Hours. I'm David Meltzer, and our next repeat offender, one of my favorite entrepreneurs in the entire world. Everybody knows who he is. He needs no introduction. My favorite shark, don't tell Mark that. Three times New York Times bestselling author and so much more, because his vision is to impact the world. And welcome, first of all, Damon John to Office Hours.
Hey, what's up, everybody? What's going on, D?
Good to see you, man. So it's so interesting because in entrepreneurship, people talk about productivity so much. And then there's also that Gary V trend that I, you know, hitch onto, which is gratitude, right? We're talking productivity, gratitude. Oh. But you're the only one out there that talks about something that I've been talking about, and it means so much, and it's called accessibility. And it's a two-way street of accessibility. It's, you know, the accessibility to everyone, which has never been before. We're old enough to know the total addressable community is beyond our imagination, but it's also accessing what we want from that community. How important is accessibility within the context of productivity and gratitude?
Well, I mean, I think there's two elements to it. It's accessibility and it's the use of accessibility. I actually put up a post today where I have a lot of game-changing healthy people around me all day, and I didn't necessarily use what knowledge they have, or the fact that you have these things in your hand, but if you're only going to hit on the first link on top to get all your answers, and the actual answer is probably 30 links down because that person's not a great marketer, but that person's a great doctor or manufacturer or photographer, but you're only going to the first one, where you're not using the full access of what you have. So it's actually the use of access, I think, that's critical.
Hey, Damon. This is Mary Sees, the founder of The Bakery Co-Work, the largest female-focused co-working space. But you know me from way back when I had a brand called Cupcake Mafia, that I went through so much when it came to raising capital and scaling that brand. And so many founders need to know, what are three things that you should know before you start taking investors or, you know, getting on Shark Tank?
Well, first of all, what are you going to use the capital for? And is it something that you need to raise capital early in, you know, and raise it for? Because, you know, the earlier you raise capital, the more it costs. And if you're doing it because you may have a weak advertising campaign and you think raising capital is going to increase the productivity or the conversion of your campaign because you're going to buy more time, commercials, pay-per-click, that's not going to help you. So if you're going to buy more inventory, but you know, your inventory already is subpar, well, you're going to get more returns. So capital often can highlight your weaknesses. That's why I call it the power of broke. Also, what's in it for the person investing? If you're somebody come on Shark Tank, you say, well, I want Damon John to invest in me because, he has clothing companies. I actually went onto Shark Tank because in 08, when people couldn't pay their mortgages, the last thing they were doing was buying clothing. So I had 10 clothing companies and 8 of them were dead. The last thing I wanted was clothing because I wanted to be able to diversify my portfolio. So your lack of homework and what I want would probably be a big problem. Some people want to invest in you because they want return on capital. They like what you're doing. They want to feel sexy. Their husband wants that business, but instead of putting $1 million in that business, they put $100,000 in yours and you get to train their husband. There's so many different ways about doing that. And last but not least, but this is the most important, is how are you going to actually add value to your customer with this new infusion of capital?
Love that.
Even in mortgages.
I'm so excited to talk to you right now. I love this concept of access. And I agree, David, with your comment earlier about social media just opened up the world for people to have access to incredible resources, but there's a right and a wrong way to leverage that access. And I just would love your insight into that world.
It's digging deep into the access and the information you have, right? And finding ways to not just look at things so literal. I'll give you an example. You know, I remember going to one of my first banks and the person said to me, well, I can only write, $50,000 loans. And I didn't just take that as the answer. I said, well, can you write me three loans? And they was like, Yeah, I didn't think of that. Sure. Right? Or you go to somebody and say, listen, I want $1 million from you. And they say, I'm not going to give you $1 million. You know what you say to them after that? How did you get your first million? So, you know, it's always how do you skin the cat? Remember, OPM, like our buddy Jay Abraham would say, David, is not OPM is other people's money. It's other people's mind power, manpower, manufacturing, marketing, mentors, and mistakes. There's always a lot of different ways to skin the cat. And people who are too literal, they never get anywhere because they're only like this. You know, the smartest people in the world, usually meaning doctors and lawyers and a lot of people who are really great at what they do, they don't go in the gray areas. And that's where success is, in that gray area, finding ways to create innovation.
Yeah, the empty mouth, they do the HELOCs. They only have that introductory offer for 6 or 12 months. Mm-hmm. I said, well, can I be reintroduced when this is over? And I do, and it's amazing. They say yes. As long as you keep your money here, I'll reintroduce you at 1.9% interest. I'm like, well, that's basically a fixed rate for me then.
No joke. What's shaking, Damon? Rick Jordan, good to meet you, brother.
What's happening?
Hey.
Good to meet you.
I work with the Shark. He's on my board. And I got to build a relationship with him.
Which one is on your board?
An OG, Kevin Harrington. Yep.
Oh, that's my buddy, yeah. Yep,
right on. And he said no to me for 3 years, right? And then finally said yes when he understood the business model. But the most important thing I learned was to double down. And I'm glad I didn't take on capital early. And that's exactly what he said. He helped take me public. Where do you think that shifting point is? You know, when do you say on Shark Tank, hey, this is when I want to get involved?
Yeah, you know, so everybody has a different model, right? And again, it's access, right? We all know here, venture firms, stuff, you know, if somebody has $100 million, what are they, and they need to deploy it in 5 years. Well, they don't want to deploy $101 million checks. They want to do, you know, if they have, they want to do either seven or 10, $10 million checks, whatever the case is, right? And they may be in somebody who is after round A, B, and C. Other people want to put a bunch of $20,000 into a bunch of other startups, and then they find their Ubers of the world. I find that when I think capital is needed is when, first of all, you know why you want capital. You know, listen, if you have an ice cream store and you're doing $1 million and you take in capital, but you're you know, you 6 months out of the year, you get to be with your children, you know, and go to school with them. And, you know, during the summer you work. Well, then taking in capital to then go to $2 million a year to work the full period of the whole year to still only net the same thing, I don't think it's a value to you, because now you got to give 50% to some asshole that's sitting at home, right? So I think that it's really, really about scalability. But you know, usually when people, and I'm talking about Kevin O'Leary, but usually when you take in capital because you cannot keep up with the orders, you need new equipment. And even then, capital may not be somebody getting an investment. If you can't keep up with the orders, well, maybe you go to the bank and get factoring, and now they're going to factor you at 10 or 12%. You keep 100% of your company, right? So, you know, it all depends. It's a very personal matter when people take in capital. There's a lot of people doing, you know, $200 million in business, and they'll tell you they're the richest, poorest person in the room because it's a capital-intensive company. Maybe they want to take $50 million off the table because they don't know if that business is on a bell curve and it's going to hit here. And then everybody else got paid but them. I'm going to leave you one last point. The person that made the most money out of my company or my business the first 3 years was a guy named Johnny Wong. He said to me, I don't want any of your business. I'm a manufacturer over here in China, and I want $1 per gene. I don't care if your gene is $6 or $75. I want $1 per gene. 3 years into the business, he walked away with $30 million. We made 30 million jeans, and we were busy dealing with warehouses, inventory, reinvesting in advertising, marketing, employees. And he just quit the business with his $30 million, and he's been just chilling ever since then.
If you don't like somebody, tell them, hey, I hope you have a ton of employees at overhead. You've just cursed them, and they think you blessed them. Damon John is a genius. He's an expression of God. Even though he's a Yankee fan, I still love him. Talking about accessibility, Damon, thank you always for being so accessible to our community and pouring into that community to serve others. You are a true compassionate capitalist. I love seeing you. I love listening to you. I love learning from you. Please promise me you'll always come back. We appreciate you. The incredible Damon John.